This is the City of South Jordan City Council Study Meeting. Today is Tuesday, July 15th, 2025. My name is Dawn Ramsey, and I have the privilege of serving as mayor of the City of South Jordan with our outstanding city council seated up here with me. And our city administration, so many of our senior staff are here. We appreciate all of you. We also have visitors, presenters. Thank you to everyone who's here. We welcome any member of the public here or who will watch this later. We welcome you. We're going to open with an invocation tonight by Councilmember Don Shelton.
Our Father in heaven, we come before thee this afternoon. We thank thee for the blessing of being able to live in this land and in this city where there's so much freedom and opportunity. And we're thankful for the opportunity to participate in our own governance. Heavenly Father, we thank thee for the professional staff and for their diligence and their expertise. And we pray that thou will be with each of them and bless them, that they will be able to perform their duties well and safely. We thank thee for the members of the council and our mayor. Pray that thou will be with them, bless them and their families as they serve. We love thee and ask these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Mr. Shelton. Okay, we'll start with our coordination. Anybody have anything specific that you would like to coordinate, make sure everybody knows today?
Summer's hot.
Summer's hot. Yeah, July's so a hot. Unique month, and it's great. Yeah.
I just want to thank, I mean, I know we've brought it before, like the potholes, and I've seen a lot of potholes getting filled recently, so thanks for whoever's arranging that. So,
Mr. Garrison.
Mr. Garrison.
Yeah, Mr. Garrison, thank you.
Yeah. That's good. Anyone have anything else?
Anything on my calendar?
Okay, it's a unique month. A lot of organizations maybe take a break in July or try to punt all the work to June and August so they can take July off. So there's just a little bit less of the kind of some of the stuff we would usually coordinate on. So.
There's a July 24th celebration out at Glenmore. Mm-hmm. It's always great.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to that. Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about our regular council meeting, see if you have any questions. And it's all in the agenda, and it's just available for review. It always has been. But we're going to talk about the Altitude Residential Development Project land use. We've got several public hearings, three in a row. So the way I plan to do that is to ask staff and then the applicant to speak about all three, both resolutions and the zoning ordinance, and then we'll open each public hearing separately and hold those public hearings, and then we'll go to the three items that would need to be voted on that way. But I think if we do, usually we have a public hearing and then turn to the council for questions and whatever. We'll do all three public hearings, then we'll turn for questions and discussion. And
they're still all three separate
things. All three separate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It just seems clunky to have like a whole discussion about the vote and then hold another public hearing on something else before we take a vote. Right. So we'll do all three public hearings and we'll have the whole discussion about all three items.
Well, they'll just come up three times. If you do the
other well, and same with this, if with the council, if we turn to the council and discuss it and then say, okay, but we're not going to take a vote on that yet. We're going to go have a next public hearing. We'll do all three public hearings and then we'll talk about all of it and hold three votes. So that's how we plan to do that. And then we have more public hearing items. Tonight is a very full night, really full night, and it's worth it because hopefully everyone was able to enjoy the 4th of July, spend some time with loved ones or doing whatever you wanted to do for that week. And now we'll fit the rest of the work in tonight. So we also are going to have a presentation on our front runner station area plan. Very excited about that. It's our last one, our last station area plan to get finished in South Jordan, and getting that done into the Wasatch Front Regional Council by August will be awesome. So that'll be good. We have our parks, open space, and recreation trails master plan. So that will also be tonight. And, you know, we've had these things presented to us, and we also will have our Parks and Recreation impact fee tonight. We've had the presentation on that, so that's also on the agenda for tonight. We also have a request that will come before us that Jason will bring before us from, we'll talk about it here tonight, from Harriman City to join the Trans-Jordan Cities Interlocal Cooperation Agreement. You know, there are seven cities as part of that right now, and Harriman would like to join. So we'll talk about that in a few. And then that vote will be in the next meeting. And actually, item G2, I'm going to ask for a motion to amend the agenda and move that to the very first.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That was a little...
Yeah, it was that. That's, I think that was the intention. It's going to be okay. So we're gonna ask for a motion to move that to the very first, and look forward to that. And I'm just going to make a plea for some support for that to add the name to that street. The presentation will happen, and Brian Priest is well prepared for that. But if you should approve that street name change, there will be neighbors and family members there. Hoping to have that named after Logan, who perished in that house explosion.
I feel like the idea of moving it forward, but I'm wondering if now if the public, who may have seen posted at 8:30, would come to our meeting late.
My understanding is they're being informed, and the family would prefer that it be first, okay, and their neighbors are being informed.
That's why I just
took care of it. So.
Yeah,
okay, I just hate for us to move it forward and then leave them out of it.
Question: is it better to leave it where it is because of timing? And yeah,
okay, the family's aware. Folks,
so. Yeah, they actually would prefer to have it be first.
Love it.
So
they were very thankful that we were going.
And then, depending on what you all decide about that, if you should decide to go ahead and do that, then we have a copy of the sign with Logan's name on it that we'll be able to go down and present to the family. So, because tonight is so packed, we have our minute approval and our council reports at the end of the meeting, because there's a lot to get to tonight. So, if you have any specific questions now about the next meeting, otherwise we will move on. You good? Okay. All right, item E, we've got the Trans-Jordan Landfill Interlocal Agreement, and we look forward to this conversation. We're going to turn to Jason Rasmussen, our Assistant City Manager, and also we've got some folks from Trans-Jordan here. We'd love to invite you to come on up to the table with us. We've got Jaron Scott here. We've got Craig Hall here, both from Trans-Jordan, and so...
Okay.
Thanks for being here. Jason, take it away.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. So I'm just going to turn the time over to Jaron here. He's going to walk through just a brief history of this resolution that's before us, and that'll be in the regular session tonight, and explain Harriman. Harriman's never been a member of Trans-Jordan, although they're really close to the landfill. And so the time has finally come to pursue this, and I'll go ahead and turn it over to Jaron, and he'll walk us through the history on this and where we're at.
Thanks for letting me be here. It's great to be here. This is my eighth city, so all the other cities besides South Jordan have passed this exact same resolution. So what's before you is the interlocal agreement, the amended agreement to allow Harriman City to join. So let me just give a little bit of background. Feel free to stop me and ask any questions, but kind of hopefully this paints a picture of what's going on. Before I get into that, though, I'd like to just let you know the transfer station in Sandy will be having its grand opening on the 27th. You'll be getting an email, but if you want to put that on your calendars, that'll be Wednesday during the day at about 11 a.m.
August 27th.
Yeah. So Jason will be dispersing that from the board's perspective, and just want to make you aware that that facility is in completion. We're really proud of it, and it'll be an amazing facility. Look forward to a second here in South Jordan as we close the landfill shortly. Do I aim that somewhere specifically?
Sometimes just turning it on and off.
Buzzed at me.
Go ahead. We can just do it manually. There's not too many slides.
No, just a couple. So, a little bit of history. Trans-Jordan was formed in 1958 with Sandy and West Jordan. Midvale joined in 1960. Murray joined in 68. We were annexed into South Jordan in 1996 when you folks joined here. And then the last two cities were Riverton and Draper in 1997. In 2016, we purchased the Bayview Landfill, which is where the waste will go for the next 100 plus years following the closure of Trans-Jordan. And then this year, we got two big items, which I just spoke about. Number one is the Sandy Transfer Station opening, in August, and then in 2025 as well, Harriman joining Transjordan, and that's the reason we're here today. So, go ahead. Harriman's never been a member, but they've always taken their waste to Transjordan. They've been taking their waste there since they were formed as a city. And they recently put out an RFP for solid waste collection and disposal. They have been a member of the Wasatch Front Waste Recycling District. And the increase there this year of about 30% to their residents caused them to go out and look for other options for collection. That's not landfilling, but that's collection. But they also wrote into that RFP they would look for, they're looking for a permanent home for their solid waste. So when that happened, we started a conversation talking about what their options were. They bring us about 20,000 curbside tons, and the residents visit about 14,000 trips per year. They are third only to West Jordan and South Jordan. Those are my most visited from residents that come out and see us. That is not including any commercial hauls or anything like that. That's just residents wanting to get load of a couch or refrigerator or something else like that. So, we started talking about that and presented to the board of directors, and there was unanimous support to move forward. For the positives there, and I'll talk about those here. Go ahead. If they did leave, what would happen? We'd lose about 20,000 annual tons of revenue. They are paying full commercial gate rate. So just a reminder, the cities pay $26 a ton currently, and the residents, or this regular commercial, is $41 a ton. So the city members are given a large discount. They have been paying the full gate rate, and if they left, we would lose that full gate rate amount. About $1 million in revenue there. And what would happen to those 14,000 annual Harriman visits? Those are our most expensive trips to the landfill or the residents. We have to educate them more, give them more time with staff and those kinds of things. So if we lost the commercial from Harriman, what would we do with all the residential visits? That would cause some issues, and the board would be looking at maybe adding an additional fee for those that are out of the interlocal areas, and so we wanted to make sure we had an option going forward with that. So both these issues would drive up costs, and that's the big thing at the end of the day, is if Harriman did leave, take their waste somewhere, if they hauled it to out of county or to another private landfill somewhere else, then the cost would go up for all the other seven member cities because their revenue has been coming in continuously. So, yeah, go ahead.
But will they not be getting a discount when they join?
And I'll cover that here shortly. You're on the right track, exactly. So, as we continue to receive Harriman waste now and in the future, it keeps the cost down to members, economies of scale, gives the residents of Harriman a place to take their waste, and both of those become really important as they grow. As you know, Harriman City is going to more than double in size as their projected plans, and so it gives them a chance to get rid of their solid waste as they need to. It also reduces pollution. Geographically, they're located right next to us. It doesn't make any sense to haul that waste to Utah County or Northern Salt Lake County or anywhere else. That would just cause more traffic on the roads. So, and an additional city makes the total membership 8 strong cities. We're already very strong. We're very proud of our membership. South Jordan being our host city is fantastic, and all the other cities as well, but this makes us an 8 strong city organization. So, go ahead. So what the way this works is Transjordan, we did evaluation at the end of business on 2024. Fiscal year was valued at $44,161,000. So similar to how South Jordan, Riverton, and Draper joined, what Harriman would do is continue to pay that full gate rate cost, the $41 a ton, and then the difference between the $41 and the $26 or the $15 a ton is put towards their buying amount of $5.5 million. This is the exact same agreement that South Jordan, Riverton, and Draper had, just the dollars have gone obviously way up since then. There would be four $100,000 payments due on July 1st of 26, 27, 28, and 29, about a 7% buy-in. That's the same percentage to what South Jordan, Riverton, and Draper paid when they joined back in 1996 and 1997. So very similar, those payments would go towards the cost to buy that down. So the next slide, go ahead, shows you that estimated payment schedule. If there's a 3% growth rate in Harriman, we believe it'll be much higher than that. They would pay off their principal sum, would be retired in year 14. Now in this agreement, the same as was in with the other three cities, if they haven't paid off their principal payment by year 15, the remainder is forgiven, and they get to pay that member city rate after 15 years of full payments. So that's the way that they would buy in, similar again to what we've done in the past with the other cities that have joined. So, did that answer your question?
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Good, yep, go ahead. So current seven member cities, you know, are Draper, Midvale, Murray, Riverton, Sandy, South Jordan, West Jordan. We are formed by an interlocal agreement. All seven current owner cities must adopt the same as well as Harriman. So eight total have to adopt the exact same resolution, which is before you today in council meeting. So wording is the same. It's exactly the same thing. Those are all passed. The only difference is Harriman and Transjordan have an agreement with each other for the actual purchase with these
payment
arrangements and business deals written into that agreement. So, yep. Go ahead. So again, these last two slides are just the same things as I communicate when I'm here. We are committed to low tipping fees, integrated waste management, environmentally sound practices, residential access, long-term disposal, education and outreach. It's a big part of what we do. We're not just a dump, you know, as the old term is, you go out to the landfill, we're an engineered landfill, we spend millions of dollars to make sure things are taken care of properly, and having Harriman, another member, will help us accomplish those goals. So I think there's one less slide. And again, this is just some of the same things. We're really excited about our beneficial use with our landfill gas. We've got the power agreement, purchase agreement with Murray out here. The Bayview landfill is online now and is selling power onto the Kern River pipeline, gas is being metered onto the Kern River pipeline, and we're getting a nice return for all the gas that is produced from that landfill. And that's where the waste from your residents will go once Transjordan is full and we build the transfer station out here. So I'm willing to answer any questions. I really appreciate your support in taking this issue on today.
So the Bayview landfill, that's the one we talked about years ago, that's way south of Utah Lake, right?
Correct. It's not way south, but it's right on the corner, southwest corner of Utah Lake.
Is it part of a city, or is it?
Nope, it's out by, if you know where the LDS Church Farm with all those circle pivots are out there, and there's a dairy, it's right there. It's north of Genoa.
So it's on whose land? Who owns the land?
It's actually Sitla land.
Let me respond. We have a long-term lease with Sitla. It will become
State Trust Lands.
State Institutional Trust Lands.
Okay.
We have a long-term lease with them. At the end of the lease, we own the property. They don't want a landfill back.
Right.
So we pay them an annual fee based on tippage and tonnage that come every year. So in essence, we're the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And we own 800 acres. It's an eternal landfill for us.
Okay.
It's at least 100 years capacity.
How long is the lease before ownership takes place? Because I know it was 100
years. Just about 25 years, I think, something like that.
And if I remember right, as we close sales, we can deed portion of that back that we would own it. They don't want that liability, So it works out great. We're one of their largest leasing customers for the school
district. I didn't
realize
it was on Sitla land. That's actually a great.
It is a great.
That's really good.
It's a great partnership.
Yeah.
It's a great deal. Everybody benefits.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
It's being used currently.
Correct. All of Utah County besides Payson is going there.
Okay.
And then Wasatch Integrated from Layton, they're sending Davis and Morgan County's waste. About half of their waste is going there now.
Yeah,
it'll take all of my cities eventually, and it'll be well over a million tons a year. When Transjordan goes, will be the last cities.
It's closest to the largest landfill in the state now.
Correct.
About 400,000 tons a year.
It'll be second in the west to the Las Vegas landfill, if you've passed that one on the way into Las Vegas. That's the largest in the United States currently. That one's open 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. So this will be
the best thing about our purchase or leasing of that landfill. It makes the private landfills have to play ball and not gouges. If we did not have that landfill and we had to negotiate with the private landfills, the price would be a lot higher than it is now. We're operating that landfill at about $11.50 a ton. It's the lowest price in the United States.
The Transjordan or the Bayview?
The Bayview landfill.
Bayview, okay.
Yeah. Think of it, $11.50 a ton. And we control the fee.
Yeah. So it'll keep costs down to residents long-term. Our big costs will become transportation as we close Transjordan.
Did you say at the start of the presentation that Harriman's, that whatever the fees are that they're paying, whoever they're paying for their right now, went up 30%?
Their collection costs went up
30%. The hauler.
Yeah.
Whilst that's front, waste and recycling.
Yeah. Then
had a single year 30% increase.
It's going to make a big difference for Harriman residents.
Yeah.
Besides proximity and all the reasons that it's just, right, they're right there, but that's significant.
They had two really good, they have not awarded bid yet, but they had two really good private haulers that bid on that project, and I think they're getting ready to award that shortly. So, to like an Ace or Republic or Waste Management, similar to what you have here. So.
Yeah. Anybody have any other questions for them?
Well, I do. When
When do you expect the landfill to close?
2032 is projected. That's a hard thing to gauge exactly based on economy, because if the economy slows down, then we don't fill up as fast. So right now, with 3% growth, which we've been pretty close to, we actually dipped down just a couple percentage points this year. 2032, we want that transfer station designed and up and ready. So you'll start hearing from me a little bit more as I come to zoning and planning and start producing some plans and final stages for the transfer station out here, what it looks like and what the renderings are. So for me, I think that's a really important thing. If you want to see what it looks like and how they operate, coming to Sandy and seeing that facility, like, again, we're so proud of it. It's a beautiful facility. How waste can be handled in that way in a city setting. We're right next to Public Works. We've got multiple neighbors, you know, I think there's 8 neighbors within 1,000 feet of us, and how that whole project went down and how we clean the air, you know, turns over 3 times an hour inside and is filtered and all that kind of stuff. It's a really neat project. So, and we want to replicate that same thing here for residents of the west side, West Jordan, Riverton, South Jordan, and who am I missing? Harriman, excuse me, would use this facility out here. So.
And at the time that it closes, then I expect our fees will increase. Is that
correct? Yeah, we anticipate a little bit of an increase to start hauling that waste. Yeah, we're financially doing pretty well. We've had some increases over the last few years, and we're looking at that. But yeah, we anticipate our financial model is stating we'll need a little bit of an increase, anywhere from $5 to $7 a ton, to get us to get pay for that extra hauling down that 44 miles.
And what are we paying currently?
26 a ton for the city rate. 41 is our regular commercial per ton rate.
And is there a capital expense that we'll be responsible for the creation of the transfer station?
No, we anticipate currently if you remember, I presented a few years back, we did an agreement with Daybreak where we bought 50 acres from them, and that gives us some buffer land. As we close the landfill, they've wanted first right of refusal on about 25 acres of that. That'll be a good capital push for us or get back for us that we'll look into. Also, we bonded for the transfer station in Sandy. We'll probably bond as well, having the residents that are using the facility actually pay for that facility.
So. Okay, and that bond will be covered by the
revenues.
By the
tipping fees.
$5 increase. Correct. That you expect. That yep.
That'll be built into that increase as well.
Okay. Exactly. And then maintaining the landfill, what will it look like?
So we are required, as the EPA standards are written now, for 30 years to maintain that site. We anticipate that's going to go up. A lot of these landfills that were told that 30 years ago are coming off, and I don't think the EPA is going to allow them to walk away from those sites. So for us, it's going to continue to produce methane. We're going to put a 4th engine in here, hopefully shortly, nice. And then we'll continue to produce methane. We have to environmentally maintain it. We walk it quarterly. So the entire thing is grid walk to make sure there's no methane getting out of it. It's got a vacuum on the entire landfill all the time. So we have to continue to do that. We have to test the groundwater above and below. We do that in conjunction with Kennecott because they have the groundwater plan underneath us. And then we have to also just grade the roads, make sure there's no erosion, all those kinds of things. For a minimum of 30, I think that'll kick up to about 50 years. So from 2032 to at least 2062, we will maintain that on a very regular basis.
And that'll just be a field of natural grass.
Well, that's part of what we need to discuss. I think we're going to come to the city council and say, hey, we've got some plans. We think we can put some solar on there and do some projects. Daybreak's been interested in some other alternative energy options, as well as maybe some mountain biking and things like that. We think it'll be we can turn it into a utilized area for the residents of South Jordan.
Oh, so it can be open to the public at a certain level.
Correct. So we mothball a big majority of that, and there's some methane wells and things that we'd have to make sure are safe and that kind of stuff. But the old idea of having a park or a golf course, they've tried that so many times around the country, and they just settle too much. They just don't work. But like a pump track, you know, the mountain biking teams in the high schools are very, very popular. They're always looking for space. They're always looking for a place where they can train and do those kinds of things. That's something that could work. That's an idea. You pour a cart path, and in 2 years, it's 6 inches off. Whereas you have a mountain bike course, you just go in and grade it every year, and it works really well. So we'll continue to – I'll come annually with, you know, talking to Jason and Ray as my board members, and make sure we're on the agenda to kind of update you on those plans, and we'll hopefully – you'll know those things way in advance of what the actual closure looks like and have some renderings and things like that.
Jared, that's great. I think it's important, Don, the state requires, because of our permit, for us to put aside money every year to maintain that closure inspection. And so we have close, I think it's about $4
million. $5.2
million. That we've saved over the years that will be used to maintain
for that
after closure. Now, when we say closure, we're always going to attempt to leave open the public, the PCC, so the residents can come and take their household waste there.
Sure.
To make sure it's still convenient. So it's closure for commercial and that sort of thing, but not for the residential use. It's kind of the concept for the future.
But the transfer station will be there, right?
Well, we have the PCC there where you can drive in now and go in and dump it on.
That's great.
We'll maintain both. And so like on Saturdays, they'll both be open to the public. Probably weekdays, the PCC will be for residents and the transfer station will be for commercial, and then open that up for both on the weekends. But we're going to maintain the scales, the household hazardous waste collection, the recycling bins for tires and all that kind of stuff up there as well.
Wonderful.
Yep.
That's great. Thank you.
Yep.
I don't know if you mentioned this, but when you talk about the reclamation or the development of this when it's closed, how many acres?
180.
180.
Yeah.
That's
significant. That's another Bingham Creek Regional Park.
Yeah, it's big.
Yeah. So now we're on, we need about 25 of that to maintain our operations smushed up against Highway 111. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be the total 180, but we're talking about 150 acres.
That's a lot of usable space.
Yeah,
that's great.
It is.
I'm so glad they're thinking of how to use it. It's good.
Good. Go ahead.
So we went over the numbers a lot. So Jason, Dustin, so when you guys look at the numbers, is this a good decision for the city? Okay.
I think it is. Bringing on the 8th city and their contribution coming in with the costs we have moving forward, it helps the landfill overall and its finances.
Okay, so you had someone went through it in depth with the numbers and it all makes sense. Okay.
It's basically the same deal that they gave us when we joined.
Yep.
It's just,
that's great.
The costs are more because the numbers are more.
Yep. Perfect.
But it's the same basic deal.
I'm kind of surprised Harriman hasn't joined before now.
I was just going to ask, why haven't they joined before?
That's the $64 million question. Why won't you come and save money?
No, it's really they were hands-off on managing that service because their current provider was Old Salt Lake County, and the county kind of ran things for them, and they just never got involved to take over.
It's
that
just the
service
process of growing up as a city. You know, Harriman's a young city, 25 years old, whatever it is. And so, I mean, I get it, but this is probably a really good decision for them.
Correct.
Long term, it is.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Short term, it's not going to save them much money. It's still going to be 41, and but they're buying equity.
Yeah.
It's like buying a house.
Yeah.
They're going to get equity every year.
Yeah. Anybody have any other questions?
Becoming
okay.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thanks, you guys, for all your work.
That's correct. So that item, the resolution is on the council agenda.
It's a dump it on
our recommendation.
Careful how you say it. And it has been unanimous by all the other cities, right?
Yes. Yes. We're the last one.
Okay. Thank you. Item E2. We are going to have a presentation here by our police chief, and he brought some friends, and we appreciate you being here.
So Mayor, I'll
take it away.
I'll start with that. So over the last few weeks and months, several of you have reached out expressing concerns that you have had with observing the use of electronic bikes and scooters and golf carts and different things in the community. We have also heard from residents in the community that have raised concerns about this issue. Our own staff has observed several issues happening in the community. So as part of that, I reached out with the chief and his team, asked them to look into this issue and prepare for you kind of some background and understanding of what exists, what the laws are, some suggested paths that we can take forward as far as education and enforcement goes, which are our two best tools to address this problem. And so Chief Carr and his team will kind of walk you through that. We can have some discussion. I'd like to get some direction from you as how we kind of proceed to deal with this issue in our community. So with that, Chief, and
team.
Yeah. Hey, team, look at this. We got a new
Rob
team
Hansen,
here.
Deputy Chief. This is Lieutenant Case Winder. He's over our Special Services Division. This is Sergeant Mark Squire. He's over our traffic unit. These two guys have been dealing with this issue for a while, so I asked them to kind of come and present some stuff. So we'll just have a conversation as we move through here about some of the stuff that we're seeing. When we talk about e-bike, I think it may be a bit of a misnomer because the biggest problem we're seeing is electric motorcycles that are not e-bikes. Oh, you don't pedal them.
You're seeing a lot of those now.
We see a lot of that. So with that, maybe introduction, go ahead, Mark, and work us through this.
Thank you, Chief. As he was saying, we've seen a pretty prevalent issue of the e-motorcycles that people refer to as e-bikes on our streets. And we'll go through the differences of them. The state of Utah has come out with quite a few different codes to try to combat the issues that we're seeing. And we'll give a little bit of a brief and background on those so we have an understanding. The current Southern City Municipal Code was written quite a while ago, back in 99, has a little bit of antiquated language in it. And so we're looking to discuss this and see if a change would be reasonable. This came about when we were training officers in our department with all the rules and regulations to identify differences between e-bikes and the motorcycles. And one of our codes was brought up that actually prohibits any e-bike or electric assist scooter from being on any sidewalk, trails, or parks within our city. That would include the Jordan River Trailway, which we see a very high amount of people properly and reasonably using electric assist scooters and bicycles. The state law does allow for e-bikes and electric assist scooters, which we'll discuss what those are defined as, on streets and sidewalks. They're given the same rights as a pedal bike. So this is the code that we'll be looking at. It references the term motor-driven cycle, which is not defined per se in our code. It's just meant to define anything that is a cycle, something that has a wheel and a motor attached to it. So that would include everything from a motorized little scooter to electric assist mobility devices to wheelchairs and everything of that sort. So it is a Class C misdemeanor as it's defined. This would be if you saw, technically, we had had the ADA and we obviously would move forward with discretion if we saw someone operating a wheelchair in a park. We haven't had any instances, nor would we go and cite that person.
That was what I was wondering. I thought, wait a minute, that sounds to me a little concerning.
We're not enforcing any of this. We're just bringing
it to
you and
saying,
hey, this
is an antiquated ordinance
that we probably need to look at.
But this may be where we need to clarify and maybe change the code to
clean that up and make that clear. Yeah.
25 years, and we probably need to.
Yeah,
what's been said. This is currently on the
code. That's currently
on the books. But remember, officers have some discretion. Right. Grandma and her jazzy is not
going to
take.
But cleaning up that language might be a really good idea at this point because they are more prevalent than they even were that long ago. So,
So here's what we have for state law regarding e-bikes. For an e-bike, you have to have operable pedals, and we put that in there specifically because you can buy non-operable pedals off of Amazon to just attach to it or affix so it looks like it is. They define it into three different classes. So you have class one, which the bike has to be pedaled and it can only maintain a speed of up to 20 miles an hour with assistance. That's not to say someone can be on a class one bike and if they're pedaling faster than 20 miles an hour in their own human power, just like a cyclist, if a Tour de France rider decided to ride on the sidewalk, they could presumably do it at whatever speed they would like to as long as they're not endangering any vehicle or pedestrian traffic. For a class two, the device or the bicycle can exclusively propel the rider without any assistance up to 20 miles an hour. And then for a class three, it's able to provide assistance as long as the rider's pedaling up to 28 miles an hour. And all three of these are treated the same as any sort of human-powered pedal bike, where they're allowed to go on sidewalks, streets, or anywhere that someone on just a pedal bike would be able to go.
Okay. Question, clarifications. So if there's pedals that are helping propel the bike, those would not be discriminated or outlawed from these trails.
Correct. As long as they do not exceed the 28 mile an hour manufacturer set limit.
Can the police monitor how fast someone's going on a bike?
They could. It would be a rare instance for us too. There are agencies, like I know San Diego police will go and sit on their very busy boardwalks because they have a problem with people going too quickly.
Yeah. I mean, that
but
makes sense.
They would have to go and set up speed limits and make
right.
people aware of what it was.
Okay. Thank you.
We do have a catch-all code, and I use that terminology for implementation of safety discretion in that if an officer sees someone, regardless of what classification of bike they're on, going down a sidewalk at a very high rate of speed and there's pedestrians in the way, we have a city code that we would be able to enforce against someone. Just a visual representation of the different classifications that we have here. There are some additional rules that apply to each class, which is restrictive of anyone under the age of 16 to the class 3. For the class 2, they have to be at least 14 years old. And if they're under that, they need a parent with them. And then anyone under the age of 8 is not allowed to ride any sort of e-bike.
So is that, officer, I'm sorry, is that based on this current state law? Is that
correct? Yes, sir.
Okay. So that has nothing to do with our ordinances, that's state law.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, currently ours are quite a bit more restrictive than what the state law says just because of that code.
The language.
With the language of the motor-driven cycle.
Right.
These are probably what's provoking the biggest concern. And to date, I think in the last 2 or 3 weeks since we put out our training, we've impounded 3 or 4 of these. These are made by several different manufacturers. Suron is one of the top ones that came out first with it. But these are ultimately dirt bikes and even considered street legal motorcycles that are quiet. So we don't see as many complaints because they don't have a combustion engine. However, they go so quick now that we're seeing a lot of issues with usually younger kids riding very quickly on sidewalks or in streets. And we'll see unlicensed drivers that kind of weave in and out of traffic because they think they're on somewhat of a pedal bike and they think they have kind of reasoning to go and do it. So
do we see pedals are on that bike?
This one has pegs on it.
Pegs, okay.
Yeah. There are some that will, for lack of a better term, slap pedals on it, that if it still goes over the capacity of 28 miles an hour, then it would still be illegal.
And this is where I think we see some of the parents believe these are nothing more than just an e-bike type of thing, or a bicycle, and it's clearly not. We've had numerous issues with these. You have to still have, I mean, even if it was street legal, which there's some question whether these are just off-road or could even be made street legal, you'd have to be 16, you'd have to have at least 16, you'd have to have a driver's license with a motorcycle endorsement, need to be registered, insurance, all of those things. But yet we're seeing 12 to 14-year-old kids riding,
racing around
on the sidewalk, in the street.
Throughout the district.
Wherever.
Bouncing back and forth, that's what I've seen.
So these going up 114.
Destroying the grass at the schools.
Changing the language wouldn't have any effect to these. These are considered motorcycles regardless of what our city code has.
Okay, so currently, I just saw not a police officer, but some kind of vehicle with flashing lights pull over somebody on one of these on Kestrel Rise Road.
That was probably
like
a community service officer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they pulled a guy over. He was on one of these, and I'm like, yes. Are they giving tickets? Or
the current method that we have right now, so long as they're not a safety hazard or creating property damage, we're leaning toward a warning for education on the first time, and we're working with Rachel Van Cleve about a pamphlet or a little bit more of a media presence with this to educate our public. And then on the second offense, or if we do see those safety or property concern hazards, then it gets a ticket and it goes on the back of a tow truck and gets impounded.
That's part of why we want to have the conversation with you tonight, to see how you feel about this approach and if it's the direction you want us to go. And because part of the public education will be some communications through our communications team, to let parents and owners of these devices know that this is coming and to be alert to it.
And with those warnings, we're involving parents. Right. We're not just having a chat with the, the kids.
And it's being documented in our
and
system.
And sending them on their way. We're making sure we have parent involvement because we find that a lot of this is education.
So the one I saw pulled over just a week ago, is he looked well over 16. But the majority of the infractions I see in my neighborhood is under 16.
Yeah.
So if your community people pull over someone under 16, are they just saying, here's a warning, are you stopping?
We're stopping them. We're documenting it in our system. We're contacting the parents and either facilitating that young person to get home or have the parents come. There's some kind of effort there, depending on,
I saw an officer that had four of them pulled over on 4800 West yesterday.
The reason being, we've had a few. We've had a few cases. One this morning where our officers that were working overtime shift on Friday of last week for the movie in the park made contact with a few juveniles, educated them that they can't ride these motorcycles there, but he wasn't in a capacity to go and document it and contact parents. So happens that he responded to a crash this morning with one of the same juveniles involved riding the motorcycle on a public street and crashed into a car. And so in that instance, he ended up impounding the bike. Fortunately, there wasn't significant injuries, but we found if we do not contact parents and make them very aware of it, and that their children were contacted by the police, which we generally do just as a standard of practice, that the kids will take that as a free pass and just continue to do it.
It makes sense that a lot of this comes down to education. There's always been dirt bikes and whatever, but we're kind of at a whole new, this is kind of a new thing.
And electronic.
And they're everywhere now, and they're cool, and they look cool, and I mean, I get it, but there's a lot of educating. I think you're right. There's a lot of parents who maybe don't realize they're more than an e-bike, you know.
Well, the behavior on them, too, that's the other thing. And their reckless behavior, that's the concern.
That's what we hear the most concern about.
And they're under 16.
You know, when their parents are in view, they're solid. They're obeying everything.
They got the governor on that.
They got the governor, yeah.
Well, and I think part of it, too, from a parent perspective, you look at, I used to go do those same things, type activities, but I was on a pedal bike. I could not... Definitely didn't get up to that 28 even. You know, and
if all those electric motorcycles were combustion engines, we'd be getting a lot more complaints just about the noise alone.
A few more slides here. I mentioned a motor assisted scooter. So these do not have to have operable pedals or pedals at all. And they are stand up devices. They cannot exceed 2000 watts or 20 miles an hour. So there's a lot of private ones out there. There's also the semi-private or public use ones from different manufacturers that you go and rent it for a short period of time and then return it to a certain area. Those ones are all limited at 20 miles an hour. So those ones are legal, and they're able to ride them without registration insurance. They can ride them on the sidewalk, on the road, so long as they're not endangering vehicle traffic or pedestrians.
And are we able to put any additional restrictions onto those? I just saw a scary incident the other night. The girl, I mean, she was her older sister who was maybe like 8, and the other one was like, I'd say 4. She was barely able to stand on and hold on to those handles going across 40th West at South Durham Parkway. And I'm just like, that girl hits a curb, a rock, or anything, she's not going to be able to control that. No helmets, anything. It's just like...
Was it a privately owned one or one of those rental ones?
Yeah, privately owned. But I think it's another one of those that parents think the same thing as the...
You see it on bikes.
I guess it's just that speed factor.
40th at 106? That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's just one of those, like... Yeah, you think might let your kid, you know, on their regular scooter, you know, go, but...
You can't legislate stupid.
Yeah.
I'm not sure...
I would say for regular enforcement, probably not, because it's treated just like a bicycle. However, if there's a crash involved in it, then we can start to backtrack from it. How fast were you going? Were you familiar with it? Was it a crash that was caused from the way you're riding or some other sort of factor? And then we could take action if we found something that was negligent.
And we'd always back the police if they saw something that was completely dangerous, like a really small child zooming at 20 miles per hour, and they felt they needed to...
They may stop that.
We're behind that. They need to use that discretion.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
There's those green ones around that people check out and drive around.
The Limes and the Uber and
Do we have any city umbrella regulation on that? Or it's just they do whatever they want?
We considered some a number of years ago. Salt Lake and some other entities did some stuff. We didn't have the same metro downtown type thing where they really congregate. You see a few around. And they're starting to be more and more in the last few years. And so we can revisit that. But to the best of my recollection, we didn't adopt anything last time. We did discuss it. I think all of you were in office. It would have been right toward the beginning of your terms.
Yeah, it's a growing group of participants. And in Daybreak, you'll see them laying all over the place.
I've had
several residents say to me, don't you have any rules as a city where they have to park those? I'm like, I don't think we do. But
it's probably something that's been a lot more in the last 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, even the last year.
Last year.
They'll scoot around the lake and go.
Whereas before it wasn't, we weren't seeing a lot of them.
And then they just discard them wherever. Yeah. And same all along the Daybreak Parkway or wherever. Yeah. Just dumped. Yeah.
Problem is they just discard them wherever.
Yeah.
For our signage on these, it's somewhat sparse. This is down on the Jordan River Trailway. I went to a few different areas just to see what we had, educating the public. And this is a sign down at about 116 of the Jordan River Trailway. For context, we have that top sentence right there. That's the state code for what a motor vehicle is. And then it does exclude pedal bikes, motorized wheelchairs, electric assist mobility devices, e-bikes, or scooters, where ours doesn't have those same exclusions. So that's the difference between us and the state. This is a slide just showing what the rights that e-bikes, e-scooters alike, and bicycles all have. So they are allowed to ride on the sidewalk as long as they're not endangering the public, riding in a negligent manner, or endangering any sort of vehicle traffic. And again, officers can use quite a bit of discretion on that. If we see something that is in a very gray area, but we still think there's a safety concern, we can go and make the contact, educate, and then have the individual move along without any sort of law enforcement action.
What is the excluding motorists as scooters? What? I don't understand that.
So the state code's a little convoluted in this sense.
Motorcycle.
Motor assisted scooters get the same rights as a bicycle, but contextually for the state code, they're excluded from that certain sentence in there.
So it's just they're defining bicycle rights, and then do they later define motor assisted scooters, right?
They do, yeah. This right here is the motor assisted scooter.
Gotcha.
So the state code says these are allowed to operate like a bicycle and get the same rules. However, they didn't want to consider this a bicycle.
Want to add them together. Okay.
Some other signage we have in a business down near 106 in the Jordan River Trailway, they sell and advertise for renting for e-bikes, and it's when I was down there, and this day it was up in the triple digits, so there weren't as many as there usually are, but I would say just a rough estimate, we're probably having at least 100 or so bicycles on the Jordan River Trailway every day, and a good majority of those are e-bikes. It's people that are riding within control and reasonably, but technically they're violating the city code.
City.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who don't realize that.
So they're violating the city code because they're not allowed on that trail?
Because they're driving a motor-driven cycle.
And really, because our ordinance is 25 years old.
We need to update it.
Yeah, we do.
We're not suggesting that we do anything different than maybe the state code, which would allow this kind of stuff.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people who I know don't realize that.
No. And their
friends that are retirees that love to ride their e-bikes.
And again, we're not
trail
we're not
and they
enforcing
don't realize
that.
It. Yeah.
Right. But we should have our code.
But the code
support.
Should match what,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
What we
that is what I have for you.
So specific direction that you're looking for.
Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of those is do you want us to bring back some new language? Do you want to go in and change the code to update that, address some of these things? Do you want us to look at signage issues, where this should be allowed, shouldn't be allowed, so it's very clear? How aggressive do you want us to be in an education rollout with our communications teams? how much do you want our officers that are out on the street stopping, educating, enforcing? Kind of what's your pleasure as a council? Where do you want to shape this? It's growing rapidly. You've all identified it as being an issue. How do you want to do this? What tools do you want to put in our toolbox? How aggressive do we want to be?
I speak to them, all right. I mean, I can tell you what I think. I think we should change our code so it's consistent with the state law. I think the state law is not unreasonable. Does the state law specify a speed limit on bikes or e-bikes?
No, it just says that you have to ride in control, not in a negligent manner.
Yeah. Well, and maybe that's what we go with.
Adults, yeah.
Yeah. So I think we should change our code. I think that we should prepare some communications, you know, both social media and on our website, and maybe even in some of our newsletter or something, that's just really clear that, you know, specifies that these electric motorcycles, for example, are not allowed on the streets or the sidewalks or the trails. And then I like the education and enforcement approach that that you're taking. I like that. You know, I think it's a good approach.
And again, the problem we're seeing mostly is with the motorcycles, not the e-bikes. We're not out there, you know, looking at somebody on an e-bike and going, are they 16 or 17? You know, I mean,
yeah.
we're not really doing that. And unless there's some kind of reckless behavior or something like that.
Right.
But really the problem that we're seeing is the motorcycles.
Yeah. I agree. And I can point you to places in Bingham Creek Park, which I suspect Don could as well, that clearly the e-bikes or the electric motorcycles are tearing up the landscape. And they're destroying certain areas in that park.
Just real briefly, you know, golf carts, side-by-sides, four-wheelers. What's thoughts on those?
Well, that might come up.
Yeah.
So the version that the police department got was quite a bit lengthier than this one. There's a specification for almost every sort of different size of an engine or the capacity at which the vehicle can go. So we have low-speed vehicles, which would be like a tractor, or a golf cart that has a windshield, parking brake, lamps, and a horn on it. A golf cart, per state code, is not allowed on any public street. The state code says that it can also be treated as a bicycle, so they're allowed to ride on bike paths, but they wouldn't be able to cross any street, so it wouldn't really provide a lot of use to them. The state code also says you're not allowed to drive a golf cart on any public street unless the city has an ordinance allowing you to. So it puts it onto the cities. And as of today, I checked, the first and only city that I'm aware of that allows it is Highland. And they say that you can't be on roads over 25 miles an hour, has to be a licensed driver, has to have the turn lamps and a light on the front and the back.
So in the entire state of Utah, crazy. Highland is the only one that has it. Not St. George.
As far as if they do, it wasn't readily available.
Interesting.
I know on some of the privately owned streets, in HOAs and
that's
stuff,
probably in the HOAs.
They do allow them, but that's just not city property. It's not
got
a public street.
Got
so
it.
I know you'll see them. I don't know if it's allowed by the city or if it's private property.
Do you have a preference in a direction you want to go with the golf carts? Do you want us to address that, leave it as it is, where it's currently not allowed, and we educate and enforce that?
So I probably see more golf carts, maybe you and I. In Daybreak, there's golf carts. Those aren't the people that are causing wrecks. Actually, let me back up. There are golf carts that zoom across the school park across the street from my house, and it freaks me out because they'll have like 42 kids hanging on to it, and they'll be up and down the hills, and I'm just waiting for a kid to get run over. So I think the idea of a golf cart being driven by a mature person should be absolutely regulated. When I see 12 and 14-year-olds driving around golf carts, they've got their friends hanging on the edges, and I'm like, who's the idiot that lets their kids do that? But somebody's going to get run over someday by one of those, and that won't be pretty.
It's not just your neighbor. I've seen them in front of City Hall.
Golf carts clear down here.
Oh yeah, they come here to go to Cafe Rio. They park in parking stalls.
We have people driving to our church.
27.
Oh, so people are, okay, I thought it was a daybreak thing.
No, it's a South Jordan thing.
I would say with the golf carts, if we embark on that, that's not my biggest concern. These dirt bike, electric dirt bikes are a problem. But if it is a golf cart that we address, I think it should be an age thing.
They're prohibited right now. If there hasn't been an issue, we can leave enforcement.
We leave education,
and
enforcement,
and
discretion with the officers.
Prohibited by state law.
And by the,
because
the,
we haven't
the
allowed,
city hasn't allowed
something.
Yeah. I mean, the legislature allowed the cities to carve something out
very,
if they wanted to.
Yeah, very technically, we allow that crossing at Glenmore because of the golf course, and that's all known. I would say that's allowed there for that very limited use. But other than that, but if
people are expecting it there,
yes, and
it's
there's signage, and we
usually
keep the signs
kids
up.
Hanging off the back.
So it's by people.
They're not
using
just
the course.
Going
the question
Patrick
is, if you don't
Don
think there's a problem, then maybe we're good as we are, and we just let our officers handle it as they have been.
If you get a call from somebody that says there's a reckless golf cart, what do you do?
We still have the code that we can say you're driving an unlicensed, unregistered vehicle on the roadway. So we could, depending on what sort of call it is and what we're seeing and observing, and then the conversation we have with someone, if they're tolerant of what we're saying, we usually would be somewhat lenient on letting them keep the golf cart. But if they're intolerant of it, we could tell it. But
do you do the same process of contacting a parent?
Like if it's a juvenile, then yeah, we would.
Okay, good.
And as you were mentioning before, that ordinance and some HOAs, they'll restrict it to the speed limit. It has to be a licensed driver, and there can't be more passengers than there are seats. So if there's kids hanging off of it, that would be an issue.
Yeah.
But if it's an HOA, it would have to be an HOA that has private rooms.
Yes.
Yeah.
We don't have any.
We don't have many of those left in the city.
It's like open down the alley. Back to your first question, I love that we're addressing this. For the last several months, I'm like, we have got to come up with a plan because these dirt bikes / electric bikes are everywhere. And they just make me so nervous. And I think we definitely should do a campaign that Rachel pushes out on every platform, educating them, hey, you may not be aware. Most people don't understand that the city doesn't allow this. Like, just kind of some phrasing of, I'm sure you're not doing this on purpose. I don't know. However we want to phrase it.
What I would recommend, because I'm hearing two parts to that. One is to update the code. What I would recommend is that we work on that immediately to get that updated so that the code is updated when we start the education campaign so that we have very clear language. Because what I don't want to do is start the education campaign and then go change the code. So if you're okay with that, let's do that first. We'll make that the priority to get the code changed. And we'll start preparing all of the communications to roll with that as soon as we bring that back and you adopt those changes.
I put it on our list of things to do, and so I'd like to know how you'd prioritize it with the Lime scooters, the scooter thing. I'm seeing it as secondary. Let's get this done. Mm-hmm. Let's educate, and then let's follow up with the scooters in the this
and then some
summer,
discussion
fall.
About which trails you want to allow and not allow.
Yeah.
For
the e-bikes and those kinds of things. Do we need to update signage? Do you want us to bring back a plan and say on these trails,
because right now it's a little unclear. I don't think people know exactly what that means. No motorized vehicles. They don't consider what they're riding a motorized vehicle.
Exactly.
Right.
And from an education
trail.
Standpoint,
they're thinking, well, I'm not driving
a
car on
sign
it.
That
so
says, you're on the Lime scooter, you're okay. You're on the motorized motorcycle, you're not okay.
But an e-bike with pedals, you're okay.
If that's the direction we want to go.
I
yeah.
absolutely vote okay. that that's okay. Those
so
are not
we'll,
people that are
we'll
reckless.
We'll put that into this as well.
So,
well that would be in line with the state code, the current state code.
And this is kind of going beyond what we're talking about, but I think that the video that you guys put out just recently talking to Natalie about why The movies in the park was changed, and the why behind it, everything she went through, best thing I've ever seen. It was absolutely fantastic, and people responded to it going, okay, thanks for the information, now we get it, right? Maybe along these lines, it's good to do it that way too. Let's have some of our officer experts explain these are the rules and why. This is what we've experienced. These are some of the things that have happened. And we've seen an uptick in this kind of accident or this kind of, I mean, we've had fatalities because of these children in the last couple of years pass away from accidents on things like this. Maybe as part of the messaging, that's the why, right? We want people to understand the why behind why it is. Yeah.
Well, they need to visually see it. So in the video, have an e-bike, have one of those dirt bike motorized things so they can see, oh, here's what you're talking about and here's what you're talking about.
The training that they've put together internally for the officers has a lot more in the slide deck with a lot of examples of that. So we have the reference material to create those materials. Okay, we'll work to get these changes started. I will bring it back to another work session so that you can see it, we can kick it around, and then we'll get it on a regular meeting so we can get that going.
Thank you.
Any other final thoughts on that? If not, we'll...
Well, I know that we are delaying the education enforcement piece, but I assume...
Well, they'll still be out there.
We're still doing the education enforcement stuff.
Yeah. On the e-motorcycles.
On the motorcycles,
particularly.
Yes. Yeah.
That's great.
Good. Okay. Thanks, you guys. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. All right. I'm now going to ask for a motion to recess our city council study meeting and move us to executive closed session to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation and also to discuss regarding deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems. Can I please get a motion for that?
So moved.
Thank you. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Open meeting for the study meeting, and I'm now going to ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.